Welcome back to the Green Front. I am very pleased to have my friend and fellow climate agitator, climate denier agitator, D.R. Tucker on the line. Not only is D.R. always on the watch for good stories and sends them to those of us who are on his recipient list, and soon we're going to have a website up for the Green Tea Party, and you'll get to see all this great stuff that he culls from the the blogosphere and the internet, and you just you don't sleep, DR, do you? So I'll wish you a happy birthday, but I'm wondering how you look so young, given you seem to never sleep. I wake up in the morning, and there's, 5 to 10 stories that you sent me overnight, and you're on the East Coast. So even with a time difference, I look, and I go, I don't think he's sleeping much. Is this stuff keeping you awake at night?
So, yes, it does. It
Seriously, I think it does.
Bothers me.
Let's just, for anyone who's not had the pleasure to hear your story, you weren't always losing sleep over the climate and the deniers and the deniasaurs, as I call them. What got into you? How did you catch what I've had for years? And I got news for you, there's no cure.
Well, just to recap, a couple of years ago I happened to read a book by Morris Fiorina, a professor at Stanford University. He wrote a book about political segregation in American life, and he cited that environmentalism was one of those fault lines of political segregation. And he noted that there was a time when Republicans were the big environmentalists, and gradually, for various reasons, it became the Democratic Party that was associated with environmentalism. So I found that very, very interesting, and I was not aware of the extent to which the Republican Party was the environmentalist party, and wondered why they lost that tradition. And this was around the time that the so-called Climategate, pseudo-scandal took place, and I found it very curious that a lot of conservative pundits and commentators were, running around saying this proved that global warming wasn't real, and I thought it was odd that they were relying on a crime to make their case that global warming wasn't real, which caused me to wonder whether or not it was in fact real. So about a year ago now, I read the IPCC report along the advice of a friend and tried to find anything that, was out of place or odd, but I found the material unbelievably convincing, and I came to the conclusion that, with so much evidence, with the preponderance of the evidence being assembled by the IPCC report, I concluded that, in fact, I was wrong, and that anthropogenic global warming was, in fact, real, and that a major effort both nationally and internationally needed to be done to reduce carbon emissions.
Well, God bless you for reading the science, and that's, I think, why I keep, telling your story, and I love to hear it in your words, because that is what's so darn confounding. It's willful, selective ignorance on the part of those who would deny climate change, whether they're running for the White House or they're front and center on Fox News or have a, daily radio show. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Rick Perry in reverse order, and Rick Perry has company, Michelle Bachmann, and to hear these people who just are so certain they're right and they know more than the scientists, but yet who refuse to actually read the literature, the scientific evidence that's gathered, they just won't do it, ever. And if they did, they'd have to answer to, so what do you think now? And they just refuse to. And that's what really is so infuriating, because it's not funny. It's not, it's not kids' play. We're talking about, the biggest challenge, and I think I'm sure you'd agree, unfolding crisis of our time, and yet they continue to just get away with somehow saying what they want to say, just like stubborn kids, worse, I would say. I'm sure you agree. So I want to ask you, since it is your birthday, what would be your birthday wish if you could wave a magic green wand, DR? What would you like to see happen? What would be the most significant thing that would change, that would shift this surreal snapshot of a moment that we're in vis-a-vis politics, environment, media, and climate in particular?
Well, first of all, price on carbon, and number two, sort of a let's just say a decision by some of the fossil fuel companies to stop funding some of the think tanks, and stop paying some of the think tanks to say that climate change is fake, because I think those think tanks, by doing so, are not only embarrassing themselves, they're embarrassing the conservative message they claim to stand for.
And along those lines, Thomas Friedman had a great quote in his column. It's every time he hears Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann talking about how climate change is a fraud perpetuated by Al Gore, he's reminded of the line in Jack Nicholson's line in As Good As It Gets, when asked, where do they teach you to talk like this? The answer is, sell crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here. That's what it's like. It's like, stop it. Like, just stop saying this crap, you know. Don't you want to, like, shake them through the television set and say, you know, take some time. Do your homework, people.
It's fascinating because today Jennifer Rubin, a columnist for The Washington Post, has a piece criticizing Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry for what she calls their decision to embrace ignorance and to reject empirical evidence and scientific thought. She doesn't mention climate change at all in this post, which is interesting. She's discussing this in the context of the whole matter about Gardasil and Rick Perry basically trying to pressure underage girls to take that vaccine in Texas. But it's very, very interesting that at least...
That's a pressing world concern, almost as important as climate change. Not to minimize that, I have a teenage daughter, and that is something we labored over and discussed, significant conversation. But come on, I mean, to make that an issue, it's like gay rights, you know, it's like a smokescreen to really avoid some of the more pressing issues. But I'm biased. I see the world through green lenses.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But it is interesting that Rubin doesn't mention that the other obvious aspect of anti-science thought within the GOP.
Exactly. And do you still consider yourself a proud Republican, or have you had to remove yourself from even the party because you're so appalled by the way the majority of more conservative element of the Republican Party is being on this one issue, but this one very important issue?
You know, it's hard to have any sort of pride when you look at these recent Republican debates that have been taking place. I've been watching the Republican debates since I was old enough to vote, starting with the 1996 presidential election. And the sad thing is, I don't hear any ideas in these debates. I hear a lot of insults about Obama and about, you know, the health care bill and all that sort of stuff, but I don't see any ideas. Now, luckily, in the most recent debate, the CNN Tea Party debate, green issues didn't come up in any sort of major way, and I say luckily because at least it prevented me from having to hear, you know, the usual denialist stuff. All that was mentioned was Herman Cain saying that he would essentially rein in the EPA. But other than that, you know, it's just really embarrassing to see some of these recent debates because, you know, I just miss the days when people would at least pretend to have some ideas, and now they seem to have none. They just seem to be on
the
course for insulting.
That too. Yeah, I missed that too. And how did we regress so quickly, so dramatically? Something we grew up with is just, common sense is that things will progress, that we will, the more we learn, the more we know about reality, we'll get smarter. And no one, I don't think, could have predicted the dumbing down, you know, of America, at least, you know, as far as willful, selective ignorance. That's the one that really is hard to wrap our around. One of the posts, just to talk about something on the positive side here, it is your birthday, let's have a happy day here, was an article about why low carbon means high profit, at least eventually. Why this is really probably what's going to win the day is the argument about how much money can be saved for those companies that really accept reality, embrace it, plan for, you know, reducing their carbon, and a future where it's going to be common knowledge that we're dealing with something as real as climate change.
Yes, there was an article out of I believe it was an Australian publication.
The Guardian, yeah.
The London Guardian, and their coverage of these issues has been very, very good. The reason why I enjoyed the piece is that because one of the common things I run into from people who don't think they're deniers, but for all intents and purposes, they are deniers, they're willing to concede that it's reality, and they're willing to concede at least a minimal role for humanity, but then they turn around and say, well, it'll be too much for us to reduce carbon emissions, it's going to cost too much, it'll be a job killer, that sort of thing. And whenever these pieces come along showing that the economic benefit to, you know, moving away from carbon-based fuels. I love, you know, highlighting these pieces because there is no way to refute these pieces. There is no way to refute the argument that one can do well by doing good, and if you can show that somebody can make a profit off protecting the planet, pardon the alliteration, what is their excuse for not protecting the planet?
Right. Good question. And what do you think of the conservative pundits jumping on the Solyndra story as, you know, surely evidence of the fact that the solar industry, A, is completely corrupt, and B, is no longer a viable, you know, technology?
It's interesting. There was a report on the New York Times website today noting that there is some apparent bipartisan issues involving Solyndra, that there have been allegations that apparently towards the end of the Bush administration, the Bush people were considering approving a loan for Solyndra. And also there's been some allegations that in addition to the I believe Kaiser, who's the Democratic fundraiser, was involved in this, so apparently members of the Walton family were also involved in this as well, and they've donated huge to Republicans over the years. So it's interesting. I won't automatically defend all the machinations behind the deal, at least from what we know, because I know there was, you know, here in Massachusetts, there was a similar controversy over a solar deal that our Governor Deval Patrick approved that sort of blew up in his face. But I find it very, very interesting that the argument seems to be from the conservatives, see, this proves why we shouldn't invest at all in renewable energy. It means that, to me, all this means is that you have to invest in companies that seem to be actually viable instead of companies that are dubious in terms of their viability. It doesn't mean you abandon pursuing renewable energy or green energy. It's odd, the sort of conclusions some of the renewable deniers, if you will, come to.
Mm-hmm. And what do you make of the recent debates and the Republicans in the audience applauding Governor Perry when he would proudly declare his disbelief in climate change as a problem? I mean, doesn't that make you feel like they just all had the same Kool-Aid? They all read the same memo? It's appalling how they can embarrass themselves by being so certain that what they're hearing and what they're applauding is the truth, when what he's saying goes against, you know, all evidence to the contrary. I mean, are they really in that much of a bubble? What's your you know, sense of that psychology, since you, I don't want to indict you in any way to be an unintelligent person, because you're quite the contrary, you're brilliant. But how can they get into that pocket where they really can, you know, keep out certain facts that are pretty evident to anyone who's paying attention?
Well, let me put it to you this way. My opinion is that the Tea Party, and I resisted coming to this conclusion for a long period of time, but my conclusion is that the Tea Party and the Tea Party audience these guys are playing to is the same group. It's the same group of people that supported Pat Buchanan's presidential campaigns in the 1990s, and let's just say I could never stand Pat Buchanan. and I wasn't a big fan of Pat Buchanan's fan base either.
I believe it. So, you know, what do we do? How do we engage those people? So forget those who are just going to clap at garbage, okay, who are going to applaud anyone who stands up there and says, you know, if I'm president, I will not spend a penny on fighting a problem that we don't even know whether it exists. You know, it hasn't been proven, whatever they say. What about just those unengaged or yet to be engaged, you know, people sort of in the middle who are not necessarily believers, but they're not also being ridiculous. They just don't know. They think that there's still controversy. What is the best way to, you know, get them to really take a second look, as you did?
Well, it's one of the things I love doing is discussing things with people who say, I don't know, but. It's impossible to have a conversation with someone who's a full-on denier, but when I come across people who say, I don't know, but, I love to speak to them and try to and sort of explain the decades and decades of evidence, point out the fact that there's no logical reason to be opposed to the science, and there's no logical reason against taking action, and then we have great discussions, because I think with the people who say, I don't know, but on some level they do know, they're smart enough not to say it's a hoax. If someone is smart enough not to say it's a hoax, they can be engaged with. But if someone is running around saying that, you know, Al Gore and George Soros made it all up, don't even bother. That's what I say.
Hmm. And what do you think is going to come, if anything, out of this 24 hours of climate reality? I don't know if you were able to listen to the first half, but we had the program director for Al Gore's group. Do you think this kind of thing can have an impact, or as I am concerned, is it going to mostly just reach the already converted? Not that that in any way diminishes from the effort, and they've got a great team of people doing the best they can to get attention. But when I just ask even my friends, are they aware of it? They're not. You know, it seems to be so difficult to get this kind of word out to just the mainstream public, even in the progressive pockets of the world where I live.
I hope Gore's effort will have an effect on climate reality initiative. I've already seen online, you know, this being used as an effort to sort of attack Al Gore, but that's par for the course. But you know, but I do think it has the potential to attract people who are otherwise not engaged on the issue. So I'm definitely keeping my fingers crossed. I mean, one of the nice things about these debates, and especially with Rick Perry's pronouncements, is that it sort of calls attention to the fact that there are so many scientists who point out where he's dead wrong. And in fact, one of the nice things about this is that it sort of compels the media to say, hey, wait a minute. What Perry is saying conflicts with the opinions of 98% of the actual climate scientists out there. They're sort of making things up as he goes along, and he seems to have taken his cues from Michael Crichton's State of Fear. Somebody in the media needs to specifically point that out. They've buzzed around it, but they don't seem to be zeroing in and pointing out that all of his statements on climate change seem to have been borrowed or appropriated from State of Fear. It's like that's his Bible for scientific learning, and that was a wildly distorted piece of bleep book.
And just follow the money, too. I mean, if anyone were to say to me, why do you pick on Rick Perry so much? Well, because he's such an easy target, given, A, the fires that continue to burn in his state, mm-hmm. his, continually being wed to his, you know, often stated, arrogantly stated belief that climate change is not a problem,
yep.
as the flames literally engulf him. And
as Joe Rome pointed out, the $11 million in donations from oil
exactly.
and gas companies.
Last but not least. And he's the front runner. He's the front runner. They're saying, you know, he's the best candidate, which maybe is good news for those of us who don't want anyone who doesn't understand our green challenges, as I say, to get anywhere near the White House. Because as things heat up, literally and figuratively, in the political campaign season, you know, leading up to the 2012 election, I have to think that the environmental core is going to mobilize, and if nothing else, just attack his, you know, unwillingness to get real on climate, just if nothing else, whatever else you think of his politics. It's just too perfect a target, again, given what's going on just with the weather in Texas. And so let's try to get back on the positive bend. I'm sorry I keep trying to do that, and then I start getting myself all emotional about this too. But, you know, it's hard. It is hard when you are someone who cares about this, and we continue to be in a defensive position still, or so it seems. You sent one article about the good news is that the U.S. Navy, I mean, our military is getting the need to get off fossil fuels in a big way.
Yes.
And how they're saying that their goal is for half of all energy that they use in the Navy alone will be not from fossil fuels by the year 2020, which isn't that far off. So those kinds of stories, I hope, are getting mainstream attention. And so whatever your politics, you know, a lot of conservatives tend to support the military. And mm-hmm. if our military leaders are saying, hey, this is a big problem, our addiction to fossil fuels and foreign oil, it's getting us entangled in wars, in fact, and we're losing lives, that should be something that they can pay attention to without feeling like they're, you know, being disloyal to their Republican or conservative or whatever roots propel them.
But you know what the sad thing is? When I discuss this with people that the military is taking climate change seriously and is trying to get off fossil fuels, the first thing people will say is, oh, the military is just bending over to political correctness. And I'm thinking to myself,
just like scientists and environmentalists are bending into greed or succumbing to greed, right? It's preposterous.
What's Jonathan Chait's term that I always use? The right-wing misinformation feedback loop. Anything that goes against conservative ideology is immediately vanquished as being somehow fictional.
And it is, as you also call it, I think, an echo chamber, how they keep repeating this nonsense round and round, and it becomes somewhat self-fulfilling but and self-perpetuating, but not just to self, to listeners, to viewers, to their very significant audience. I mean, that's, I guess, what, you know, yeah, I've got a personal and professional gripe because we progressives, we environmentalists don't have the outlets available, and the conservatives would say, well, that's because you can't hold an audience. That's because liberals, you know, waffle too much. You're on the one hand, on the other hand, you know, you're not definite enough and all this crap, frankly. but we don't. We don't have, you know, we have less than 5% of the talk radio airwaves. So no wonder these, you know, realities are not really getting out there, penetrating mainstream America.
It is sad from a certain perspective, but perversely funny from another perspective. And I say perversely funny because I think I've mentioned this before. I've come to the conclusion that the people who pursue certain entertainment forms are actively sort of, you know, going to the level of their own ignorance. A friend of mine calls this the conservative entertainment complex, in which you know, misinformation is sort of beamed back to the audience from the host, and then beamed from the host to the audience. Basically, it is a, when I say perversely funny, I say perversely funny because it can, I do believe it can be beaten, and when it is beaten, what will these guys do? What will these guys say when they've been discredited finally in the arena of public opinion?
Dear, until we get our America's Green Tea Party website up and running, is there a place where people can read your posts? I just feel like what you have your hands on and what you gather is so enlightening and so revealing and relevant every day. Do you have your own blog site? Or I just get your thing sent to me, so I haven't really looked too hard because I get the luxury of having you send them directly to our small group of believers.
Yes, my own site, which is infrequently updated, and unfortunately I need to green it up a bit more, is theurbanright.blogspot.com, which focuses more on issues of the Republican Party contradicting itself, especially in terms of so-called outreach issues. But I should start trying to send more of this stuff to that site as well, because it's been some time since I've updated it.
Absolutely. Well, again, I don't know when you sleep, but I'm glad that you are out there doing the great gathering that you are. And I want to wish you a happy birthday and a very productive year ahead, and hope you'll be a regular on this show, and hopefully in the year ahead that you and I can maybe co-host something. We've talked about that. The former conservative Republican and the liberal Democrat progressive get together, and together we have a strong agreement on one very important issue, one very important area, and it should show people that if you just tune into the facts and leave the ideology behind, and you know, I can be guilty of that too sometimes, but when it comes to this, I just ask people to do one thing, and that is just educate yourself. It's too important an issue to make this just another issue. This is the issue that will impact all others. And that is a noise in the background I'm going to avoid and use that as a chance to thank you, DR, again, for spending part of your birthday with us.
Sure.
And I want to urge our listeners to turn into 24 Hours of Climate Reality. That is underway in about 4 or 5 hours. That is Al Gore's effort to try to reach yet more people around the country and around the planet to tune into their environment, tune into our climate, tune into Mother Nature, what she's telling us, and most of all, learn what we can do to try to slow the problems that we're seeing as a result of not dealing with them. But we can turn it around. We caused it. It's just a matter of tuning in. And thanks for tuning in to the Green Front. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks to the crew back there making this show possible. And see you next time. In the meantime, have a great green week.